Good morning. Certainly a blessing and a great opportunity to be able to stand before you this morning. Glad to see our visitors. I know we've got several that are out this morning. But we're certainly appreciative of everyone that is in the assembly this morning. Today for our sermon, we're going to talk about the day of Pentecost. So if you want to turn your Bibles to Acts, the second chapter, and we're just going to kind of split this chapter in half. So this morning, I'm going to look at the first 15 verses. If you notice, I kind of put some asterisks beside it, because we kind of have to jump around a little bit. And I noticed this as I was really studying it, that as Luke is writing here, he'll say something, and then he'll clarify it a couple of verses later. And so there's got kind of some jump back and forth. But hopefully we can bring some things out as we study this most important day. This was the day of Pentecost, the day that the church was established. This afternoon, the plan is we'll look at some of the words that Peter said. We're not going to actually look at Peter's sermon. That'll save that for this afternoon. But just look at some of the surrounding ideas of this most important day, the day that the Lord's church was established, the day of Pentecost. Maybe bring up some things you haven't thought of before. So as a text, we'll look at Acts 2, verse 1. And when the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. And so we're going to study this day of Pentecost and what happened on this unbelievable day that has so much meaning to us today as we assemble in the Lord's church. Before we go further, though, let's take opportunity right now to go to God. Well, if you want to, you can try to go in and get a Bible program. Search up Day of Pentecost and see how many times that word shows up in the Old Testament. See how many times you can find the word Pentecost. I'll save you some time. The answer is zero. The Day of Pentecost, that term is only found in the New Testament. It's only used a couple of times. That's because it's a Greek word. And so we kind of have to get our bearings straight on this. We're going to start this lesson of Acts 2 in kind of a strange place. It's in the book of Leviticus. In the book of Leviticus, chapter 23, this is a subject that I really got interested in a couple years ago, and it's considered the Feast of the Lord. The Leviticus 23 is a chapter you really need to read. It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, the Feast of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, these are my feasts. And so sometimes you hear about Jewish feasts, or there's a Jewish holiday. They're not Jewish feasts, and they're not Jewish holidays. They are the feast of the Lord. These belong to God. If you go to Leviticus chapter 3, you'll read that there's seven. There's what's called the Passover. There was the Feast of Unleavened Bread. There was the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Weeks, or sometimes called the Feast of Harvest. Or, by the time we get to New Testament times, it's called the Day of Pentecost. And then there's number 5 is the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. There were seven specific feasts of the Lord that the nation of Israel was to observe. If you notice, I put some of them in blue, because these were more than just feast days. These were known as festivals. And every Jewish male above the age of 20, I believe it was, had to go or pilgrimage to the city of Jerusalem for these three feasts. First four in the spring. I don't know why I kicked my G down, but that's supposed to say spring. And 5, 6, and 7 were feasts that were found in the fall. And so these happened very, very quickly in succession. Okay? So I found this picture. You got to kind of wrap your head around what's going on. This is kind of a combination of our calendar with the Jewish calendar. So we start over here in January. The Jews start over here. Their first month starts in March. And so if you notice at the top, Passover, Unleavened Bread, and First Fruits, bam, 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 are occurred within a 3-day period. It is very, very quick. And what we would, kind of depends on the lunar cycles, it's somewhere between March maybe into April. So that is when you're going to have the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and the Feast of First Fruits. They're going to happen very, very quick in succession. 50 days after the First Fruits, we're going to have the Feast of Weeks. So that would occur in about our May. This is what is called Pentecost. At least according to the Greeks, that word. I remember I have a game. It's called Penta, P-E-N-T-E, and kind of had a grid on it. I think the object of it was to get 5 of your color markers in a row. And so you're trying to play offense, and the other guy's trying to get 5 in a row, and you're going back and forth, offense and defense. Because P-E-N-T-E in Greek means 5. And so that's where this term Pentecost comes from, the idea of 5 or 50. It's 50 days after the Feast of Weeks. These feasts of the Lord were very, very important. To us on this side of the cross, I'm afraid we've lost a lot of their meaning and their understanding, which is kind of a shame because the Apostle Paul says in Colossians 2 and 16, "So let no one judge you in food or in drink, or regarding a festival or a new moon or Sabbaths, which are a shadow of things to come, but the substance is of Christ." We are not commanded to observe the Passover or the Feast of Tabernacles. That was what was to be done under the law of Moses. But Paul says those things were a shadow of things to come, and the substance of those festivals was Jesus. Everything pointed to Jesus Christ. And I'm afraid sometimes we miss that. I think we miss that symbolic meaning. So I'm going to pull out the four spring feasts. We have Passover, we have unleavened bread, first fruits, and weeks, or Pentecost. Now these four, as I said, happened very, very quickly in succession, the first three. Passover was to be a one-day event. Unleavened bread was to be a seven-day event. And somehow, I don't know why the Jewish rabbis had done this. They had this all messed up. Passover was supposed to start in the evening. They had changed it. They had moved it to the end of the day. I don't know why. And they had taken Passover and unleavened bread, instead of having a one-day and a seven-day feast, they turned it into 1 8-day feast. I don't know why they've done that. But if you think back to the time of the Last Supper, Jesus and the disciples celebrated the Passover in the evening because that's what God had told them to do. The nation of Israel was celebrating it the next afternoon. Why they moved the time, I have no idea. But Jesus and the disciples did it the way that God had told them to do it. This idea of the first fruits was always upon the first day of the week. The way it was set up, it was always upon the first day of the week, and 50 days later, also on the first day of the week, would have been the Feast of Weeks, or the Feast of Pentecost. So let's pick up this one about weeks down here at the bottom. 50 days after first fruits, the Feast of Weeks was to occur, and that was the final spring feast. So count first fruits as day one, count them out 50. The 50th day was the day of Pentecost. It was the Feast of Weeks or the Feast of Harvest. It would always fall upon the first day of the week. It would fall upon Sunday. So, when we get to Acts 2 and 1, and Luke tells us when the day of Pentecost had fully come, they were all with one accord in one place. He's using the Greek term, Day of Pentecost, but that's the Feast of Weeks. Or you want to call it the Feast of Harvest. They're all one and the same. It's just different ways of saying it in different languages. It's the Greek name that symbolizes or signifies that it was 50 days past the idea of first fruits, this day. So you may be thinking, who cares about all this? And I could get into a rabbit hole right here that we could be here for a long time. I'm not going to do it. But I just want you to think about this. I want you to think about Jesus Christ and these spring feasts. Tell me this is coincidental. If you do, I'm not going to believe you. Then this is by design. Number one, did you realize that Jesus was crucified on the day of Passover? Jesus was crucified on the Passover. He was buried on the Feast of Unleavened Bread. He was resurrected on the Feast of First Fruits. And now 50 days later, the Holy Spirit is going to descend and the church will begin on the Feast of Weeks. The four festivals of the Feast of the Lord, all four of them have a very strong tie-in to the events in the last week of Jesus and the beginning of the church. From the death, the burial, the resurrection, and the Holy Spirit being sent, all fell upon the days of these feasts. I can't think that was just happenstance. It wasn't serendipity. That is by design. So I'm going to go back to my picture now. Passover ties in with the death, the crucifixion of Jesus. Feast of Unleavened Bread ties in with the burial. First fruits, Jesus was the first fruits of the resurrection. And then we have the Feast of Weeks, is what we're going to study this morning, is when the Holy Spirit descends. There's a lot of stuff we can talk about. And I got really into those feasts of the Lord. An amazing, amazing study. And it was right there in front of us the whole time. A lot of times we don't understand it. But now, let's talk about the Feast of Weeks. So the Bible says, as we've already read, the day of Pentecost had fully come. That meant something to the Jews. Verse 2 says, "And suddenly there came a sound from heaven as of a rushing mighty wind, and it filled filled the whole house where they were sitting. Got a question for you. What was the purpose of the wind? Have you ever thought about that? What was the purpose of this wind, this rushing, mighty wind, and this gale force, tornadic activity that blew through? What was the purpose of this rushing, mighty wind? Well, we're going to have to skip ahead a couple of verses. Like I said, this is where Luke will kind of introduce something, and then he'll explain it a couple of verses later. He tells us why later on. It was to draw attention from the Jewish crowd. He says in Acts 2 and verse 5, verses 5 and the first part of verse 6, and there were dwelling in Jerusalem devout men, Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. And when this sound occurred, the multitude came together. So what was the purpose of the wind? It was to get everybody's attention. So think about being in a factory town. How'd you get people's attention? Well, at 5 o'clock, they'd blow a whistle and everybody would come. If you were in a village back in the old days and something bad was about to happen before the age of cell phones and updates and texts and whatnot, you would ring a bell. You would ring the bell tower and then everybody would come together. In school, we have a bell that we ring. And it doesn't sound like a bell anymore. Now it's just more of that little annoying electronic buzzing. But when that little electronic buzzing goes off, everybody knows you're supposed to come into one spot. You're supposed to go here and y'all go there. That's how we separate out the kids at school. It's the same idea. What was the purpose of the wind? Was to get everyone's attention. So now it says there's men dwelling from all over that have come to Jerusalem. They hear the sound of the mighty rushing wind. And obviously, like what anybody would do, they go try to find out what the cause of it is. What is this wind? What is the sound? What is the meaning of this? Well, they get to where the apostles are. I can't explain this one at all. Then there appeared to them divided tongues as of fire, and one sat upon each of them. I have no idea what that means. Visually, I'm trying to put that in my head, and I think that's just kind of beyond my imagination, that there's some kind of divided tongue of fire sitting on top of their head. Now, I've seen pictures, I've seen artist renditions, I've seen what some people think it means. I don't know how to describe it if I saw it. But they walk in, so this mighty rushing wind comes in, the crowd hears it, they come to this room, and they see these men, and there's like divided tongues of fire, whatever that means. I don't really understand it. But I want you to notice, it's very important to understand, that it was something visual. It was something that everyone could see. There was nothing hidden about it. Everyone could see whatever these divided tongues as a fire were sitting upon their head. Then something amazing happens. It says, and they were all filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak with other tongues as the Spirit gave them utterance. And I don't know exactly what this means. I don't know exactly how this transpired, but I think it's important to understand that it was something auditory. It was something that everyone could hear. Again, there was nothing hidden about it. You could see what was going on, and you could hear what was going on. These people were speaking in different languages. They were able to speak in languages that they had never studied before. And to me, that is just a fascinating concept. Acts 2 and 5 says, and there were dwelling in Jerusalem Jews, devout men from every nation under heaven. So Luke's going to kind of do it again. He's going to introduce it. And then he'll come back in a couple verses and he'll explain it. But here's Jerusalem. It's in blue. And you see all these little words? I know you probably can't read them from where you're sitting. These are all the countries, or all the locations that are mentioned coming up in the subsequent verses. There are people from all over the world. The known Roman world have descended upon Jerusalem. Now I've got to take you one step back about our feasts. Remember I had some of them in blue? One of them was the Passover, and then one of them was the Feast of Weeks. Every Jewish male was required to go to Jerusalem for both of those feasts. They were 50 days apart. Imagine you were a Jew that came from Rome. Would you just hop on that airplane, 3-hour flight to Jerusalem? Didn't work like that, right? I don't know what it meant to travel from Rome to Jerusalem, but I'm sure it took a while. I'm sure it took several weeks. I don't know if you'd have to go by boat and had to get the trade winds just right. I don't understand that. But I know if you were coming from Rome and you were a Jew and it took you 2 weeks to get there, I don't think you would turn around and travel 2 weeks back and then turn around a week later and go back to Jerusalem for the Feast of Weeks. So what a lot of folks would do when they traveled a long distance, they would just stay in Jerusalem. They would stay for that 50-day period. So they would be there for Passover, and they would just hang around Jerusalem, and then once the Feast of Weeks occurred, then they would go back home. So there were devout men, it says, dwelling in Jerusalem, these Jews from every nation under heaven. I want to make sure you understand that. The ones that he says are dwelling in Jerusalem are the Jews from other parts of the world. And they have just descended upon Jerusalem and are just hanging out there until the Feast of Weeks. We got to understand this. When he says they were speaking with other tongues, this means languages. And I don't know how to make that any plainer or any clearer. I try not to, people have different beliefs in the religious world. And I try not to be judgmental about the things that people believe. But I don't understand this one. I don't understand why people sometimes hear the word speaking in tongues, and in their mind that means that they're just babbling some unknown language that only them and God can understand. Because that is not what it is in Acts 2 at all. And Luke, in his writing, is very, very clear about this. Three separate times, Luke clarifies the fact that they are speaking foreign languages that they could understand in their own tongue. Verse 6 says, because everyone heard them speak in his own language. Verse 8, we hear each in our own language. Verse 11, we hear them speaking in our own tongue. This was not some made-up babbling, and I'm sure you've probably seen that before in some of the denominations of the world. They just roll around on the floor and they're just speaking nonsense. And they say, well, we're speaking tongues just like they did in Acts 2. That is not what happened in Acts 2. All these people from all around the world, they had their own dialect and their own language. And in doing so, they were able to hear. These apostles were able to speak languages that they had never before studied. That was the miracle. I'm going to teach you a new word today, and I'm probably going to mispronounce it. I practiced this all week, and I still can't do it. Glossolalia. 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 There we go. That's as close as I can get. This is the technical word for the religious groups that think they're just speaking this babbling that doesn't make any sense, that it's not really a language. This phenomenon, this is from the dictionary, of apparently speaking in an unknown language, especially religious worship. It is practiced especially by Pentecostal and charismatic Christians. So that's the technical word for these folks that think they just speak in tongues, meaning they just come up with all these inauditory sounds and whatnot. I found this from a man named Charles Sullivan. He says, the doctrine of glossolalia is not an old one in the history of the church. Rather, it is a newer innovation that's less than 200 years old. Apparently, it started with some German Protestants. And from them now, when people say speaking in tongues, for whatever reason, they now think about this word. Because I guess it makes for pretty good TikToks, I guess, to see these guys running around up and down the stage and speaking this babbling tongues. But folks, that is not what is meant by speaking in tongues in Acts the second chapter. It was about speaking in foreign languages that these folks were able to hear in their own tongue. And they are just amazed that these apostles, these Galileans, were able to understand their language. They would speak their language. Verse 6 says, and when this sound, we've already talked about this, the sound, this is my italics here, the sound of the mighty rushing wind. When this sound occurred, the multitude came together and were confused because everyone heard them speak in his own language. And they were all amazed and marveled, saying to one another, look, are not all these who speak Galileans? How are these Galileans speaking all these different foreign languages? There's language, they're all the way back to Italy. There was some that were coming from the north. I don't know if you saw that map. There was a lake of it. That's Ukraine. And we're talking about people from the Slavic and Russian nations. We've got people from Africa. We've got the Medes and the Parthians. That was back to the east. How are all of these different languages, these guys, these Galileans, they're coming in and speaking this. How is this happening? Why do you use Galileans, you think? Did you know Galileans had a very specific speech. In fact, you remember when Peter got caught when he was denying the Lord? And it says in Matthew 26:73, a little later some of the other bystanders came over to Peter and said, "You must be one of them. We can tell by your Galilean accent." They spoke a certain way. They said words a certain way. And if you're from Galilee, everybody knew it. And so now all these Jews are like, how are these Galileans speaking Parthian? How are these Galileans speaking whatever, any of these different languages? How are they speaking these African languages? How are they speaking these Italian languages? How are they doing this without any study whatsoever? They're Galileans. Verse 12, you know, kind of jumping out of the order a little bit. He says, so they were all amazed and perplexed, saying to one another, whatever could this mean? Others mocking said, they are full of new wine. So the best explanation they could come up with is they're just drunk. So we're introduced to two groups of spectators. We've got one group that is amazed and perplexed, and a second group that is mocking the apostles. And I've always questioned that. I've always wondered, why would they think that they were drunk? I've never understood that. How could this be considered a symptom of drunkenness, that a person is speaking a foreign language fluently? What would go through a person's mind that says, I think he's drunk? To me, that doesn't make any sense. But I think I have an answer now. We'll see, I've kind of done some study, see if this makes sense to you. We have two groups. We have one group, it says that they were amazed and perplexed that they heard it in their own language. And then we have another group that's mocking the apostles and thinking that they are drunk. Well, let's jump ahead a little bit. This is verse 14. So Peter, when he begins his sermon, says this. Peter, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to them, men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and heed my words. That's kind of redundant. Judea is like the state and Jerusalem is like the city. It doesn't make any sense to say both of those. That would be like saying, men of Texas, and all you who dwell in San Angelo. Well, if you dwell in San Angelo, you also dwell in Texas. That's kind of a redundant statement. So what I'm thinking this is these are our two different groups that we've been talking about. We have those men of Judea. That's the people that lived there. That was the locals. Now we already figured out those who dwell in Jerusalem. We already figured out from verse 6 that that's the people that came from all over the world. These were all of our visitors. So those who dwelt in Jerusalem, the visitors, they were amazed and perplexed because they knew the language. They could hear the language and it made sense to them. They were amazed that someone could speak the language of my home country. They were amazed by that. The men of Judea, the locals, who had no idea what those other languages sounded like, the best they could come up with is, yeah, they must be drunk. That's the best they could come up with. I read a book, a little story, I think it's in our song book, actually it's a poem. It's talking about Jesus, how important, I think it's called One Solitary Life, you may have heard that. And it says here, Jesus was a man who never traveled more than 150 miles from his birthplace. That was pretty common back in those days. You just kind of stayed in your own location for the most part. And you didn't have YouTube and you didn't have Google Translate. We didn't know about all these different languages. You were in your one little area. So it would sound ridiculous if you heard someone speaking a different language. So maybe that's why they thought they were drunk. And I got to thinking, hadn't thought about this guy in a long time. Got to thinking about Leon Brown. And some of us were fortunate enough to know Leon Brown. I can't remember how long it's been since Leon died. Some of y'all, I'm sorry if you didn't meet him. Leon was the most eccentric, intelligent man I've ever met in my life. Leon was a genius of a genius of a genius. He could speak languages. He played fiddle with Willie Nelson. I mean, the guy just had an unbelievable life. Sometimes Leon would speak different languages to me. I was a younger guy. I thought that was pretty cool. Now listen, when he spoke Spanish, I knew he was speaking Spanish. I didn't understand it. But I knew he was speaking Spanish. Because I know what Spanish sounds like. And then he could speak French. Yeah, I don't understand French, but I could tell. I know what French sounds like. I don't understand it. I watched enough Hogan's Heroes that he would jump into German. I know what German sounds like. I don't understand it. But I was amazed and perplexed at how he could speak those foreign languages that sounded normal to me. Did you also know that Leon could speak Cherokee. You talk about a weird language. Cherokee doesn't even really have words. It's more like sounds and things that he would do with like clicks and clocks with his throat. It's a weird sounding language. If Leon was to walk in right now and start speaking Cherokee with all these, that don't even sound like words, I might be thinking to myself, I think he's about three sheets to the wind. I mean, he's just making nonsense babbling noises. I think that's what's meant. Those that recognize the languages would be amazed and perplexed that these Galileans were able to speak them without study. If they didn't know what the languages sounded like, it just sounded like gibberish and nonsense. Yeah, maybe they thought they were drunk. Maybe they just made fun of them because these folks were just ignorant. But that's what Peter says in verse 15. For these are not drunk, as you suppose, since it's only the third hour of the day. That means 9 o'clock in the morning. He said these people are not drunk. There's something far, far greater to this. And with this explanation, the Apostle Peter is now prepared to give the most powerful sermon that the world has ever heard. It's going to start in about verse 14, and it's going to go through about verse 37. It's not a long sermon. Now, it probably didn't take 10 minutes for him to speak it to the crowd. You know, sometimes we think we've got to talk for an hour or 2 hours. Peter didn't. It's going to be a pretty quick little sermon. But his sermon is extremely well organized. And it's going to use this idea, the concept of the Pentecost. Okay, so verse 14, I'm going to go backwards now. But Peter, standing up with the 11, raised his voice and said to them, Men of Judea and all who dwell in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and heed my words. So Peter is saying, you need to believe me. You need to believe what I'm about to tell you. You need to heed the words that I'm about to say. And I want you to think that you are one of these Jewish people in the crowd. Okay? I want you to think about what Peter has done. And I want you to think about the day of Pentecost in general. It's been 50 days since Jesus was arrested and crucified. 50 days. Go back 50 days from today. That would have been about in the 1st of September. It's not that long ago. Okay? So for 50 days, these Jews have had the opportunity to see things and to see these great wonders and to try to contemplate all these things that they saw. And the ones who were there on Passover, remember how the sky went dark for 3 hours? I'm sure they may have forgotten about that in 50 days, but I'm sure they're kind of, let's think about that. What happened? And maybe they heard stories. Maybe they didn't see it, but maybe they heard stories that there were some folks in Jerusalem that were resurrected from the dead and were walking around. So they're trying to contemplate that and put that in perspective. And they hear about Jesus and the things that he's done. And maybe they heard about those two guys that were walking to Emmaus, that little town, and how Jesus appeared to them. Maybe they heard, maybe they weren't sure, but they heard about how Thomas, one of these 11, he got to touch the hole in his hand. Maybe they heard about that. Maybe they heard about how they had the rock there at the tomb, and it was rolled away, and there was an angel sitting on top of it. Maybe they heard about this stuff. Now they come in today, they hear this sound of a rushing, mighty wind that they know has come from God. And so they rush to where this was, and they see, divided tongues of fire sitting on these apostles' heads. And they saw it, and they heard it. And they heard these languages being spoken, and they are just amazed and perplexed. And now Peter has to see which one's more believable. Okay? Because there's two stories going around, right? There's two stories going around about Jesus. The apostles and the disciples are saying, Jesus, this is the Messiah. This is the one we've been waiting for. This is the one that's been prophesied about. Jesus is the Messiah. And he's been crucified, but he was resurrected. He came and walked with us, and then he was ascended back into heaven. That's the story that the apostles are trying to tell. There's another story, too. It's from the Jewish leaders. The Jewish leaders are saying, that is not the Messiah. That is a charlatan. He is an insurrectionist. All he wants to do is stir up problems against Rome. He's trying to get us in trouble. He's just like all these other guys that they're going to start naming off later in the book of Acts. He's like Judas. He's like Theudas, I believe was his name, that got a bunch of people to follow him and took him out in the wilderness and they all died. That's what Jesus is. He's nothing. He is not the Messiah. He's a troublemaker. He's an instigator. And we have these two opposing viewpoints of Jesus. And so Peter is now going to say, whose words are more believable? Are you going to believe these apostles who were witnesses, who were there, who were sitting there with fire above their heads, speaking languages that they've never studied? Or are you going to listen to the Jews? And how did the Jews justify it? Well, we're right because we say we're right. And you need, we're right. The Jews are right. We're right because we're the Jewish leaders. We're right because we say we're right. And Peter has now got these two opposing forces. Do you want to believe the apostles? Or do you want to believe these Jewish leaders? And he has now set the table for his sermon. And it's a very well-constructed 10-minute sermon. And over 3,000 people are going to say, I get it. I get it. And then it says it grew to 5,000 within a couple of days. Because people realize, man, he is telling the truth. And he's got signs and wonders. And he can prove it. And there was no way they could talk about it. They couldn't speak that away. They couldn't argue away these people speaking in the tongues. And having the ability to do these signs and wonders and miracles, they couldn't argue that away. And so what did the Jewish leaders do instead? They just had to start arresting them. They just had to start arresting the Christians, killing the Christians, to try to quiet them because they knew they couldn't argue against them. And so now the table is set for the world's most powerful sermon ever to be given. And that's Peter's sermon on the day of Pentecost. So, in conclusion, what do we got? We got a Jewish feast. Should have been known as the Feast of Weeks. That the New Testament is translated into the day of Pentecost. It's the same thing. It was 50 days after the day of first fruits, which is when Jesus was resurrected. It was upon the first day of the week, and that is when the Lord's church began. And people from all over the world were there and were amazed and perplexed at what they saw. And the ones that didn't understand, the ignorant ones, just made fun of them. That's pretty much what human nature does. If you don't understand something, you just make fun of it. Oh, they're just a bunch of drunks. And Peter said, no, but you better heed my words. And from that, he begins his sermon that we're going to look at this afternoon. So, great story, the story of the day. You know, we're fortunate because now, here we are some 2,000 years later, upon the first day of the week, we get an opportunity to worship in that same church, that same organization that was started by that same group of people so long ago. What an awesome wonder that is. We're about to close. I have a song of invitation. We can help you in any way. Church, stand, praise, and assist.